Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast that asks the questions you always wondered if others were thinking, and it turns out that they are. I'm one of your hosts, John Mills, and with me as always is my good friend,
Matthew Rushing, the other Jedi Master.
And today we're going to be fielding our very first listener question. We got this through our Facebook page at facebook.com/aggressivenegotiations. And the question was this, pretty straightforward. I don't know if it's really a question so much as a challenge to pick our three favorite starship designs in the Star Wars saga.
And you know what I like to say to that, John? Challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted. So, see, this is what's interesting is when we were talking about this question, it wasn't specified three. But we were originally thinking in terms of a list of five, and I threw the challenge flag down to you and said, let's do three. That's going to make it way more difficult. I think it does make it more difficult because you can sort of think in fives and tens. We're all sort of like accustomed to that. Three, I think, is really where you need to start making some really difficult decisions. But before we get into our lists, one of the things I want to say is that one of your first responses to me when we were discussing this was aside from the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like a given. It would be like, what's your favorite ship in Star Trek? And being like, the Enterprise. It doesn't work.
So if I understand you correctly, it's just that the Falcon is such a given as it's going to be on your list for favorite ship design. Like, you might as well not even bother wasting the spot on it because it's just going to be there, right?
Right. I feel like that you know, in Star Wars, I think the Falcon is probably the pinnacle starship. You know, it's the one that we all think of. I mean, it's the one that if you get those polls about ships throughout different series, the one representing Star Wars is, you know, the Millennium Falcon. The one representing Star Trek is the Enterprise, the one representing Battlestar Galactica is a Viper, you know, like, so that's what my thinking was, is that's the one that when you think Star Wars and you think ships, I think your mind almost immediately goes to the Millennium Falcon.
Now, see, I don't disagree with you, but for me, I want to ask you, is it really the ship design that's so iconic or just the emotional connection to that specific ship? Because is it just that ship is so incredibly designed and so wonderful looking that it's on that different plane of existence? Or is it just because when I see that ship, because of the characters spending so much time in it and because of the emotional connection it has, that's why? So is it design or is it emotion that you think puts it in that place?
Well, I do think that's a good question, and I think it's a little bit of both. I think the ship design is very unique. You know, obviously George, the way he came up with the whole thing was, you know, he's eating a hamburger one day and he comes up with this kind of ship design, you know, with some pencils and a side. And he's like, he wanted it to feel all off balance and off kilter. And I think if somebody's looking at it for the first time, didn't know Star Wars at all, you know, you pick somebody from a place where they just had never really seen Star Wars at all. You show them that ship design, it's an odd-looking ship, but there's something that became so iconic about just the look and the design and the feel of it. I mean, you think lived universe, the Millennium Falcon was one of the things that looked the most lived in.
Sure.
And it was so beat up, and it looked like a piece of junk. But she could do 0.5 past light speed, you know? So, and she had a lot of special modifications and, you know, she had some surprises up her sleeve, but then, like you said, the emotion of that ship and everything that happens on it, the fact that that's where the adventure begins, you know, that's where Star Wars Episode 4, once they get on the Millennium Falcon, Luke's life is never the same.
Sure, and I do think it's worth noting that this iconic ship design was, they were pinch hitting. Because they had a different ship design, but then Space 1999 happened, and so they scrambled to change the design. If you look back at the original Star Wars sketchbook that came out, the original ship design was the blockade runner, what became the blockade runner. And what they did was they actually took, when they repurposed it, they actually took the cockpit section and turned it to the side to turn it into that hammerhead look. And what's also interesting about that is if you go back to the original Marvel Comics run, when the Blockade Runner is drawn by artists like Carmine Infantino, the Blockade Runner has the more Falcon-type nose section than the one that we saw in the movie. And like that was something that Infantino carried through the entire time. It used to drive me nuts as a kid, but now with sort of the appreciation for the ship design variations that we see in things like Clone Wars and Rebels, like I go back and I look at those comics and I'm kind of like, oh, that's kind of neat. I like that. Now I know where they got that.
Well, and I do think too, there's something about the design for the Millennium Falcon as it is now. And you look at that design and there, it just isn't as iconic. You know, it doesn't look as special or as outlandish or weird. It looks more prosaic comparatively. And so they actually, I think, got really blessed by the fact that they couldn't use that ship design and that they had to rethink. And they were literally outside the box by creating a round ship that had an off-center cockpit. You know, it's just, it's weird, but it really is. It's such a great piece of design work.
Do you think it affects Star Wars at all to wind up with that original Blockade Runner-esque design for the Falcon versus the one that we got? Do you think that there's any sort of loss to the visual aesthetic of the story if that key ship was different? Or do you think that that ship winds up becoming adopted and beloved as much as the Falcon was?
I think there would have been a loss. I don't think that the Millennium Falcon would have been as iconic. It didn't look as iconic. It wasn't as out there and cool and spacey and, you know, it had such a different feel to it that it let you know that you were in a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I think that there would have been something lost if it had looked like that. And so, I think it's just one of those weird, quirky things about filmmaking where something like that, which happened a lot in Star Wars, especially, you know, Episode 4, something would happen and it would force them to do something else. Yeah. And it created something really iconic. And, you know, that's the felicity of filmmaking.
And I think that's why, regardless of how much, you know, you and I both love the other five, I think that's why everybody keeps going back to that original one, is I think you very much pick up that vibe of that they were flying by the seat of their pants in a lot of ways. Like every other one that they've done, all the other six that they've done are, I'm still not used to including Episode 7. It's getting there. But, you know, all of the other ones that they've done, there's been so much more budget and planning and allowance for all of the different things that I'm basically just agreeing with you to say that I think that the Falcon also symbolizes that type of energy of, you know, if you will, like the Falcon being off balance speaks to the filmmakers being off balance and having to improvise.
Well, I think that energy flows through the rest of the films, though, even though they don't have quite the same limitations as the original. That same energy is really flowing through all the other six films. And I think that's really cool that they were able to find a way to actually carry that forward and really challenge the design. You know, and you think about the way that George works, you know, he'll come in and be like, well, I like part of that one and part of that one and part of that one. Why don't you just put all those together? The way that his mind thinks so visually and, you know, one of the coolest things that he ever said for design was that it needed in silhouette to immediately know what it was. So that's why you had the Millennium Falcon, the TIE fighter, the X-Wing, the, you know, obviously just the big round ball, the hurt ball of the Death Star, immediately in silhouette, you knew what those ships were. And that design work kind of carried on throughout the rest of the films because that was George's MO. I need to know what it is in seconds of seeing it.
And I think that we both sort of pinged Episode 7 for some of its ship designs. Some of them that I've actually warmed up to greatly since it first debuted, but there's less of a sense of whimsy. I think Ray Speeder has a hint of the type of Lucas-esque whimsy, But I do think that there's less of a sense of whimsy in episode 7 that there was, you know, like it's much more planned out.
Are you saying you don't think that troop transport just screams whimsy?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, but that's what's so strange is the Empire is supposed to represent that sort of structured, you know, unimaginative, slate gray sort of outlook. But, you know, that troop transport, I think, took it to a whole other sort of level. But, you know, I'm not going to bother beating up on it because I'm going to ask you, how do you want to handle this? Do you want to go through our lists and then talk about them? Or do you want to go fire off one by one and just do round robin here?
Yeah. How about we do round robin and we start with number 3 on the list and work our way up to number 1.
Okay.
And we'll see if somewhere along the line we meet. Because we haven't seen each other's list. We have no idea what's... I mean, we know each other pretty well, but I have one ship that I think you might have on the list, but I'm excited to hear. So, John, what is the third ship on your list?
Oh, wow. You know, I got to tell you that my list has more than 3 ship design names on it because I couldn't bring myself. I'm forcing myself in this moment to pick the top 3. I have 5. I got it down to 5. I can't help it. And the first one I'm going to throw on there, because it in a large way is a sentimental favorite, is the A-Wing. I have always loved the A-Wing. I didn't adore the A-Wing as a kid. I came to appreciate it as a teenager when I started playing the West End Games role-playing game. And just looking at that ship a lot, and it's pretty darn cool, man. And I'm a big fan of it. I actually have one of the old toys still hanging on my wall here because I can't get away from the A-Wing. It embodies, I think, what you know, Lucas's love for speed has always been. And the idea that it's always been sort of a more background ship. I mean, yes, it gets a little bit of center stage in the Return of the Jedi battle, but the X-Wings still get the most love. Like the A-Wing for me, like there's a part of me that would special edition the X-Wings out and put the A-Wings over them in the original movies. Cause I just think they're that awesome. Which is not to take away from the X-Wings design. It's just, that's how much I am in love with the A-Wing. So, what comes in at number 3 for you?
Well, this might come as a real shock, but for me, it's the J-type diplomatic barge.
The J-type diplomatic barge.
That's right.
I don't think that everybody is as well versed in that specific description. Where do they see it in the films?
Well, that is Padme's ship in Episode 2, the one that's destroyed at the very beginning of the film. And I really love that ship. I love the way that Episode 2 is the film that goes up instead of down. And I love the introduction because that ship then kind of does that flip as it's flying into Coruscant for the first time. I love Naboo design as well. And, you know, she has the long, skinny one for the rest of Episode 2. And that one's fine, but this one, there's just something about it that I really liked. I love the sleek design. I love the idea you were talking about. You know, George loves speed. Yeah. And this thing just looks fast and fierce and beautiful all at the same time. And so for me, there's something about that ship design that I find really beautiful. And, you know, if I was trying to pick ships from around the Star Wars galaxy to fly around in, that one just pimping. You know?
You know, I think it has actually one of the most beautiful shots in the entire series. Not when it's first, you know, spinning around in that homage to 2001, which is not taking away from it. It's a beautiful shot. But when it is descending into the clouds.
Yes,
landing on Coruscant. And then you pair it with that sort of giant propeller plane sound that Ben Burtt gives it. And then it just the way it's wings, just like a jet in our life, you know, creates those little trails in the clouds. It truly does possess one of the most beautiful beauty passes in the entire series. So I agree with you. It's a beautiful ship. I really do.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's probably a strange pick for people, but I was thinking about ship designs and I was like, that one just has always stood out to me. And, you know, because my thought process, what would I want to like fly around in? What would be cool? And to me, that would just be an amazing ship to be kicking around the Star Wars galaxy in.
Interesting. So for my number three, I've picked a single person down and dirty fighter that's all engine and speed. And you've chosen a big, sleek, beautiful ship that harkens back to the dreams of the flying wings of the 1950s. So what does that say about us?
I'm more refined than you are.
Oh, that's an interesting read.
Yeah.
Wasn't expecting
okay,
that.
Okay, John.
One.
I'm really I'm really excited. What is number 2 for you?
Oh gosh, this is tough. This one is going to be a slight left fielder for you, but here with my back against the wall, a ship design that I've always been in love with, General Grievous's ship.
Oh,
I don't know what its designation is. I know that I've read it somewhere what the designation is, but I remember when they were leaking photos from episode 3, and the first time I saw that, and they weren't leaks, they were the official, you know, shots that they were releasing beforehand, seeing that ship, I just think it actually looks like a race car. It looks like a Corvette.
It really does.
And that is what I love about it, is it's almost the antithesis of what I love about the A-Wing. The A-Wing looks like just this super fast, zippy ship, you know, that's just an engine with a seat. I think to speak to your idea of cruising, like Grievous's ship, it looks like the type of car slash ship that you would have, like going low across the streets of Naboo, like, hey, Chica, want to jump in my love machine? Like that is that is the type of ship. That is, it's beautiful. I mean, like, it almost looks like a boat. It looks like you could fly that thing out of space and just go to, like, a water planet or something, just, like, skid down onto the surface and then, like, pop open the lid, sit on the front of it, and cast a line and just go fishing, maybe for a big gooba fish. I don't know. And, you know, like, that's what I love about it, is I think that it speaks to, again, that design sensibility that Lucas had, or has, I should say, of the old race cars that he grew up with. The old, you know, just those muscle cars. And I really like that look.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's a fantastic ship. It's really well designed. It looks like a lot of fun. And, you know, it doesn't have a lot of time on screen, but because of the design work, I think it really does stand out. And you take notice of that ship and you remember it. And again, I think that's really just kind of the genius of George Lucas, is being able to pick the ships that are going to stick with you, even if they're just in the background. So I heartily agree. That's a fantastic ship.
Now, here's the biggest question about that ship, though, is how on earth were those controls the right size for both Obi-Wan Kenobi and General Grievous?
Well, you missed the part of where he had to like reach under the seat and pull the seat up. So that it fit, they cut that part out. But Obi-Wan was really—he was definitely adjusting the seat before you saw him like fly off.
See, I always figured he just had in his utility belt. He had like an inflatable Jedi cushion seat, like a booster seat for Jedi.
A Jedi donut.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they fly a whole lot. You gotta imagine they carry like that with them. So, but wouldn't that have been so funny if he'd been flying around in it and like everything was like way oversized? He looked like he was in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and he's like flying the ship. He's like, ah!
It had to have some sort of seat control, because you're right. You know, Obi-Wan is what, 6 feet tall? Grievous is 7 something.
Yeah.
So it's yeah.
On a bad day.
It doesn't work the math for the space.
Well, I think it speaks to the user interface and usability design that permeates the Star Wars galaxy when we're not looking. They make every ship so that anybody can fly them. Anybody.
Well, except for a Hutt.
Well, Hutts don't need to fly.
That's very true. Very true. they have somebody fly for them.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So I gave you my number two. What's your number two?
Well, for me, it's the Venator class Star Destroyer. I love this Star Destroyer. I find this Star Destroyer to be way cooler than the Star Destroyers from the original trilogy.
Agreed.
And I love that we got to spend so much time with them in the Clone Wars.
Yep.
And I think they're gorgeous. I'm just stuttering so much, but the design work for them, the way that they're painted, you know, if you've ever seen too, there was a Lego store in Dallas in one of the swanky malls, and they mm-hmm. had one made out of Legos, the open circle. Obi-Wan Kenobi's flagship, and it's just, the thing is gorgeous. So there is something about the way that ship works. I loved, too, that it opened up on the front where the fighters could come out.
I was going to say that. Yeah, that, like, I remember seeing the movie, and like when it opened up, you know, up top, I was like, oh, it can do that?
Well, they're really neat looking. I loved the twin bridges at the top, you know, so that if mm-hmm. one had been taken out, the other one was still there. You know, everything about the way the ship was designed was really cool. And it felt enough like the old Star Destroyer without, mm-hmm. you know, from the original trilogy, but without just being a copy. You know, it really did feel like that what came next was an evolution. But an evolution in not so elegant design, because these feel more elegant than the original Star Destroyers.
Well, and I think you hit on something with the color scheme on them as well, because when you see it later, you know, in the little coda of the film, the paint scheme is gone and it's all gray, the way that the Star Destroyers we came to love originally were. And it actually loses something when it loses that color. And I think even that decision in and of itself spoke to sort of because you also call out the dual bridge, and it's like, why on earth would the next evolution of this remove a brilliant redundancy, right? So that the Super Star Destroyer gets taken out by my beloved A-Wing.
Yeah, like, exactly.
If they'd had a redundant bridge, they're all right. Guys, come on.
Well, and like you said, too, that paint scheme adds something, because these ships were the Jedi cruisers, the ones that Jedi generals had for their command. And that color scheme lets you know that the galaxy still has life to it. And, you know, the minute you get to the end of episode 3, all of that color has been drained and it's just black and white. And that's all there is left.
And you know what's very interesting as well about that paint scheme is it's echoed in my beloved A-Wing, the one that made it to screen.
You're right, yeah.
It was originally going to be blue, and this is the serendipity thing. That was originally going to be blue, which is why they're blue in Rebels, the blue and white scheme, but they couldn't make them work against the blue screen that they were shooting against, so they changed it to red. Same thing.
It looked like they were invisible.
The right, yeah. Which I would think would be a plus for a ship, but hey... That's
a ship that small doesn't have a cloaking device.
Oh, says you. You don't know.
Well,
that.
I mean, you know, that was the famous argument between George and Dave when they had the whole cloaking device. And Dave literally quotes Star Wars to George, but George, a ship that small doesn't have a cloaking device. And George's answer, well, this one does.
And that's all that you need to know. Well, I mean, you know, Captain Nita botched it. This is the funny thing, is Captain Nita in that scene isn't necessarily conveying a factual thing. He's more conveying disbelief. He's saying, no, ship that small has no cloaking device. Like, he's flustered because he knows what losing the Falcon means. It means the end of his life. So, you know, he's flustered.
Captain Nita.
Oh, love that bit. Oh, all right. So now, see, this is what's difficult, is we've given our three, we've given our two. I don't want to pick a one, because you threw Venator class Star Destroyer out there. That's actually on my list. If I don't pick it next, gets honorable mention, which hurts.
Well, it's not honorable mention to you, because we're definitely agreeing on our list. So
that's true.
You can feel good that I picked it, so you don't feel like you have to pick it, right?
Oh, so you're saying this is the way we get around, just like getting around the technicality about the cloaking devices.
And or the Millennium Falcon, yes.
It's not that we have two lists. It's that we have our list. That's how we're approaching this.
Well, we are the Jedi Masters, therefore on the council, and therefore the decisions are our decisions. So, right?
Yeah, I agree with that reasoning. Now, see, what's very difficult with picking the number one, though, is I have three on here that are each deserve to be in the number one spot. So I don't want to pick it all. I'm not going to lie. Do you want me to give you the three and then try to reason through it? Or do you want to give me your one? Do you have a clear one that you
I do have a clear one. Do you would you want to switch it up and you want me to go and then maybe it'll make you feel better?
Let's switch it up. You take your number one. I'm going to make you make the hard decision there, Sophie.
Well, this for me was not a Sophie's choice. This for me was a clear winner. It's a ship that I really, really love. I actually have it hanging up in my office in Lego form. It is the B-Wing. I love, nice. love the B-Wing. And like you with the A-Wing, I would pay real money to have more B-Wings added to other scenes in the original trilogy specifically, and even The Force Awakens, because the B-Wing is such a great ship design. And think about this. We just saw how cool it is, its design work, and what it can really do on Rebels.
Yeah.
So this ship is just a crazy design of a ship. I mean, it is weird, and the way that the cockpit rotates so the ship can fly in any way, shape, or form is just incredible. And we don't see enough of it in Star Wars, and I'm really crossing my fingers that we'll see more B-Wings in Rebels, because, goodness, this ship is awesome.
I'm so glad you said B-Wing, because B-Wing is a beautiful ship. And that is one I've been in love with since 1983. I had the toy, since lost to the mists of time, but hey, that's life. Yeah, I know, right? Gosh, in retrospect, the thing would have been worth serious money because it was one of the least produced
definitely.
Toy ships.
I have never seen one in a collector store or anything like that.
I had one. I had one. I lost it to the mists of time. How
well,
sad.
Crying over your spilled blue milk. Way to go.
Yeah, I know, right? All right, so now, but the thing is, now I'm at the point where I have to pick a number one, and it is so tough. All right, I'm going to build up to the number one here.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm going to give the other two that are in serious I'm going to build up. I have to mention the other two that are, although, is that cheating? Should I wait? Should I give my number one and then we'll talk
about... How about we wait? Because I do feel like there are going to be some ships we want to mention as things that we thought about putting on the list, and then things that we absolutely, maybe one or two that we absolutely hate.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow. That's actually, the ones we hate, I think we're going to be simpatico on those. but I have to go in my number one spot with the Jedi Starfighter.
Because which one?
The one from episode 3.
Okay.
Because that one it's gorgeous. I remember seeing it in motion for the first time. I remember seeing, again, like Grievous's ship, seeing promo shots ahead of time and going, wow, that looks really cool. But once I saw that ship in motion and I saw those wings open, and I saw what it looked like from inside the cockpit and how tight it was, how tiny it was. Like, I mean, in all honesty, it sort of feels like a cheat because there are definitely echoes of the A-Wing about it. But it has the two prongs the way that the Falcon does. It has the wings that expand and make it look like a TIE fighter.
Yep.
And it has the cockpit that's like a one-person Millennium Falcon. It's almost as if, to speak to your point, and it has a droid socket. So to speak to you, which the A-Wing doesn't, to speak to your point about how Lucas could sit there and say, well, that's really cool, and that's really cool, and put those together, and let's see how that works. The Jedi Starfighter screams that to me. Like, it's just, it looks lethal, and it looks functional but beautiful. And the fact that there's a droid socket in it, I think, is also gorgeous. Now, something I'm realizing about myself is all three of mine are single-person ships. I'm concerned about what that says about me on a psychological level.
Well, I don't think it says anything bad about you. I can understand the desire to have those ships that are just yours. You know, you'd go bombing around the galaxy. You're basically, you love the hot rod.
Yeah, I guess so. But the thing is, your ships are all capable of carrying many people. Like, does that mean that you, Matthew Rushing, you enjoy the company of other people more than I do? Am I the misanthrope of the two of us? I think I am, but I guess, does this confirm that?
You know, I'm not going to make you feel bad about that. I'm really not. I think, and it's funny you mention it, because I knew you were going to pick the Starfighter from Episode 3. But that's on my short list. I love that ship. I think it's beautiful. I love the design. I think it's fantastic. Of course, I like Obi-Wan a little bit better. And
Anakin's paint scheme.
We're on different sides of that. Yeah. And I also love, I just love, love, love how Obi-Wan pops out of his when they crash land on Grievous's ship.
Oh, yeah.
And he just, it's the one of the coolest Jedi moves. Because it's so fluid, as if, I just do this every day. It's a slow Tuesday.
Yeah. Can I tell you, though, the first time I saw that shot of Obi-Wan springing out of the cockpit was actually at Celebration 3.
Oh, wow.
We were at one of the smaller presentations. Like, it was in one of the smaller rooms, and it wasn't even full because people overlooked it. Like, because it was just talking about some of the more, you know, the minutiae of the effects and everything. So people were kind of like, I don't really need to go to that one. I will never forget when they said, well, yeah, we're allowed to show you this clip. And we didn't see everything leading up to it, right? But we saw the ship skidding across and then Obi-Wan springing out.
Wow.
And my wife can tell you, like, I rose out of my seat. I was like, whoa! Like, it was just, I was not the only person in that room that was that excited either. But I agree with you. Just the way they spring out of that is just so cool. And a handy quick ejection button for the droid.
That is true. That is very true.
Very thoughtful.
Very cool.
I'll point that out. Very thoughtful. Okay, so what else almost made it to your list but didn't quite get there?
This is tough. I really like the Naboo Starfighter. I think that's a really cool design. I obviously like the Naboo things. I don't really have anything that I'm not a huge Boba Fett guy, but the Slave One is a sweet ship.
It is.
It's a cool design. And it looks like an iron, but it's still cool. And I think it's a great ship design and it's very iconic. And to me, it has nothing to do with Boba Fett. It's a sweet ship.
It is. But I think it carries an echo of what you said was so nice and distinctive about the Falcon is there is an asymmetry about it. Because since it does have that extension up top, like it doesn't look like that perfectly balanced ship that you're used to seeing in science fiction. And so I think that's pretty darn cool. I agree with you. I think Slave One is a beautiful design. Now, the thing is with the ships, there is definitely an iterative feel to a lot of the ships and to the ship designs throughout the movies. And so, believe it or not, one of my honorable mentions goes to a ship from Episode 7, which is the First Order TIE Fighter, or as I've jokingly constantly referred to it as Racing Stripe.
Yeah.
That everything's better with a Racing Stripe. But I that joke is rooted in truth for me, that I do think things are cooler with a Racing Stripe. But it does what they did between the original Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back, because they changed the models between Star Wars and Empire, and the TIE Fighters became blue and they became a little thicker. And the thing is, this TIE Fighter, I think at the very least, speaks to the idea that the First Order wants a tougher ship.
Yeah.
The fact that they have two seats in it, that it can take a shot. It looks like it can take a shot. As opposed to the original TIE Fighters, I guess they originally kind of looked like they could take a shot, but then we saw them just get incinerated by sneezes. And I think that it like it finally looks like a TIE fighter that's a fighter, that's worthy of going into combat and going toe-to-toe with another fighter ship. And I like that about it. And then another one that was on the honorable mentions list, that you already mentioned the Venator on your list, so you know that was there, but the Snowspeeder. Ever since I was a kid, yeah. I've loved the Snowspeeder just yeah. because it looks, it's sort of for the same reason that I love the real life A-10 Warthog. It looks like a brick that can get that flies for absolutely, like you look at it and you're like, the laws of physics say this thing cannot take off, but it does, and it's pretty cool looking.
You know, it's something else for me, John, that I almost mentioned was the Imperial Shuttle.
I always loved yeah.
that ship, and, yeah. you know, especially the Tidarium class. Yeah. It's such a beautiful design. It's kind of, I mean, when you think about it, it's a little bit odd looking, but the, mm-hmm. just the way the wings fold up and everything about it, it just has this kind of, I don't know, it has a strange symmetry that I really, really like, and mm-hmm. it has that Imperial functionality about it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it just screams Imperialism when you see that ship, and I really, really like that one. And so it was hard not to have that one on the list, because I think that sure. is just, it's a great design. It's a really well-done design, so.
Well, here's a question. Is the Tidarium better, or is the Emperor's, since it has a racing stripe, is that better? Because the Emperor's has a gray stripe on it.
You know, I take either one of them. It's pretty cool.
Paint scheme doesn't matter to you.
No, it really doesn't. You know, the last one that I do want to mention, because I think it was a really awesome ship design in it, and it could be, it was a ship that could fly in space and in the atmosphere, was the Clone Trooper Lander.
Those things are awesome.
Those things were just really, really awesome. And, you know, when they came whizzing in Episode 2, and then, of course, the coolest part was in the Clone Wars, was when, at the end, it started to turn into more of an Imperial design, mm-hmm. where it had, like, the wings on it, like a TIE fighter and everything. And just, that was such a great and interesting ship, and I love that thing. I think it's so cool, and I don't, you know, it doesn't have a hyperdrive or anything, but it's a great ship. I love it.
Now, here's a question that I probably should have asked at the beginning. Do pod racers count as ships?
You know, I was thinking about that, and I don't think that they do. I think they count as vehicles.
Really? Because I have had quite a bit of argument with people who said that Anakin's piloting skills don't count as being demonstrated during the pod race because the pod racer is not a ship. And I said, no, he's piloting that because it's a flying vehicle and doesn't make contact with the ground. And granted, it's a low flying vehicle, but it's still flying. So if it's flying, shouldn't it therefore count as a ship?
I think that you can make that argument. I think the argument is strong in that, yes, that he is piloting, he's flying, he's not yeah. touching the ground. It is a flying vehicle. It's just a flying vehicle. It's not a actual ship. A ship has to be able to go in space, I think. That's just my personal opinion.
It has to be able to go in space.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. What if it can be?
That's okay. Why the Clone Lander is a ship, because we saw in the Clone Wars that it would fly, you know, from the Venerator class into the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. When they're clearly out of the atmosphere. So okay. It is space worthy.
Well, I never saw the Snowspeeder go in space, but it still counts as a ship.
Yes, that is true. But I always felt like that looked like it was a ship made for,
well, I mean,
low orbit or an atmospheric flight.
Well, I mean, and technically speaking, we came to know them as snow speeders, but they were speeders being adapted to the
yes,
cold.
Exactly.
Per the script.
Exactly.
But I'm still going to throw as an honorable mention Anakin's pod racer from episode one.
Totally.
Because
worth it.
I still count it as a ship because he is piloting it. And if you want to get super technical, he does go high in the air in it.
That is true.
I will
point
that out.
He
doesn't
high.
Go up there for very long, yeah. but he is able to go up there. So, all right. So, I mean, as everybody can tell, we love talking ships and design, but I think that we would be remiss not to address what you brought up, which is ship designs we don't like. What do you want to kick?
Yeah. I'm going to pick on episode 7 a little bit because I have to say the Resistance troop transport is awful. Whoever designed that
should be fired.
Yes, it's bad.
I agree.
And I don't like Kylo Ren's shuttle either.
Oh, blasphemy! I like Kylo Ren's shuttle.
And it's not a huge. I mean, it's not a bitter hatred like the troop transport for the Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, it just.
See, I like it because it looks almost like a. I mean, for me, it does
bat
look
out
like
of hell.
It does look like a bat, and the thing is, there's just something about it. Probably the coloration, and the size of the wings. The wings are ginormous.
Yeah, it's the wings that I don't like.
But see, it's the wings that I do like because number one, they extend out and they can retract, and I think that in profile. Like for me, it calls to mind specifically the scene where it's flying down by Maz Kanata's castle. To me, it almost feels like Dracula's ship. Like it, I look at that and I think in terms of Bram Stoker's Dracula, the book, the way he describes when Dracula is a great bat flying out there, like that is almost what I see in my mind's eye. It looks like an old mythic creature. To me, I mean, we can disagree, and that's fine.
Well, yeah, and it's just, especially the way the wings literally come apart, so mm-hmm. that they slide to the side, mm-hmm. and then they slide down.
Yeah,
like the wings are literally like separated there. The power to hold those stupid wings together as it flies through hyperspace. Or just space in general, leaving the atmosphere is just insane. Like the magnetic power you'd need.
All right, now
to
see
hold
the
that
thing
together,
is,
I don't know.
I'm not going like to throw a physics challenge flag on a ship that's in a movie about space wizards.
I know. You're right. You're exactly right. What I think what was that the ship made me think about the physics of it. And that's something that George always did, I think, with his design work that he would approve, is you never felt that you were questioning anything about it. You just immediately accepted that it worked.
Interesting.
And so for me, with that ship, I was drawn out because I started to think, really? That's how those wings work? And like, no. So that's where I lost myself, and that's why I don't like it. So, but I like that we don't agree on it. So we're not always going to agree on this show, and that's why we call it aggressive negotiations.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? This has been a fantastic discussion. I want to thank our fans, first and foremost, for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. We appreciate the reviews we've gotten on iTunes so far. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you very much. And in terms of the questions, we're listening. Feel free to come by and drop off questions wherever you can find us. And Matt, where is it that they can find us online?
Yeah, John. Well, one, obviously you said we've gotten some reviews on Facebook. I wanted to say thank you to everybody who's done that. We've got 5 written reviews so far. That's fantastic. In fact, next time we're going to actually read those out and thank those people. So go in, get your review in so that we can talk about you next week.
Yes.
But you can find us on iTunes. You just search for Aggressive Negotiations. You can find us on Twitter at The Jedi Masters. You can find us on our own website at aggressivenegotiations.squarespace.com. And if you'd like to email us, you'd want to do that at aggressivenegotiations@gmail.com. Now, I'm a little bit of a moron, and when I did that, there's only one S in aggressive in that email, so just forgive me. A little
bit
of a typo.
Leave off the extra S for super awesome.
That's right. But those are all the places that you can find us online. We're all over the place. I mean, if you go to our website, you really can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on SoundCloud. We've got the RSS link there. You will be on Google Play the moment they go live with the podcasts that they're going to be doing there. So we're all over the place. Check us out and come by Facebook at our Facebook group at Aggressive Negotiations, because that's where we got the question for today. And like John said, we really want more questions because, God, this was our longest episode yet, and we had a blast doing it. And so thank you so much for the suggestion, and keep them coming. But before we go, John, I'd really like you to be able to just tell everybody else where they can find you online personally. And I also know that you have some other projects in the hopper that people should know about as well.
Ah, thanks, Matthew. Yeah, you can find me. My username just about everywhere is Kessel Junkie. And look for me on Twitter. That's usually where I'm lurking, usually giving grief to Matt about Superman. And you can also find me on the Trek FM.
Hey, you can say that on this show.
That's right. Superman, Superman, Superman. You can find me on the Trek FM network as part of Commentary Trek Stars, which is a podcast where we talk about the non-Star Trek work of Star Trek creators. And then there's another podcast where I do it with my buddy Craig called Words with Nerds. And it really defies description. You're going to have to come by and hear it for yourself. But Matthew, I want people to know where they can find you, including the show that brought us together.
Oh, gosh, John. Well, first, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram at MRushing. You can find me on the Trek FM network on The Orb with Christopher Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine exclusively. I'm also doing Literary Treks there with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We interview authors. And now there's a special place in Trek FM called the 602 Club, where we talk about all things geeky, but not Star Trek. That's where John and I met. We also have the special Star Wars feed there as well. So there's two feeds for the 602 Club. You can find them both on iTunes. Check it out. I hope you'll join us. And John, you know, I got one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.